I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and this is Boston Public Radio. Well, it is the busy season for sports fans. Whether you are a rabid fan or a casual fan, the NFL is heading into those crucial final weeks of the regular season and all the intrigue that comes with that. College football is wrapping up with bowl season right around the corner. And speaking of bowls, it was Super Bowl Saturday here in this state down at Gillette over the weekend. If you don't know what that is, stay with us. You'll find out in a bit. And that's just football. There's basketball. There's not hockey, but there's hockey things to talk about. And, of course, baseball things, as you just heard if you were with us. The Red Sox have signed a new first baseman. Well, here to help us get our hands around all of this sports stuff is a man who knows from sports, Mr. Joe Sullivan, the Boston Globe sports editor. Thanks for joining us on Boston Public
pleasure.
Radio.
Glad to be here.
So a good win for the Patriots yesterday afternoon, I think, in what maybe some people saw was going to be a trap game, one of those classic, kind of lesser opponent, big game coming up. But they pulled it out.
Yeah, I mean, they were on the road in Miami where it's been cool up here. It's warm down there. The Houston Texans are coming to Foxborough on Sunday night.
It's Monday night.
And so, yeah, you're right. It could have been a trap game. And they did not play their best, but they, I think the Dolphins did them a lot of favors. Dropping snaps on a punt certainly didn't help the Dolphins' cause. But as usual, the Patriots prevailed because they're gritty, they're smart, and they make the plays when they have to.
So after the game, Tom Brady said, and this is a quote from him, "The season starts now." So what does he mean by that?
Well, I think we're into the final stretch of games, the final four games, and that is when teams separate each other, when we know who really are going to be the Super Bowl contenders. And the Patriots are looking every bit as a Super Bowl contender. But these next 2 weeks are really going to tell us a lot more about them because, the Houston Texans are coming in Monday night, which is they have the best record in the AFC. They are the number one seed right now. They've had a tremendous season. And following that, the San Francisco 49ers on a Sunday night come to Foxborough with probably the best defense in football, an offense that's in a little bit of flux. But again, a tremendous challenge. How the Patriots fare in those two games, it's good they're both home,
yeah.
I think will tell us where they're going to land in the playoffs. Now, yesterday, clinching the division, they really look at minimum, the Patriots are going to be home for their first playoff game. The goal, and that's why these next two games are so important, is to win them both and get a bye, become one of the first two seeds in the AFC, and that way you don't have to play the first week, and you get everyone rested and healthy, and then someone has to come to Foxborough to play you.
So how important is, when you talk about things like a bye week and a home field for playoff games, do they make that big of a difference
in the
playoffs?
Well, the home field statistically has proven not to matter much.
Yeah.
I guess this is conventional wisdom on my part. But I just think the week off gets you to the smaller injuries get a chance to heal, the players get a mental break, and being home is better. Now, teams have won Super Bowls. The Giants did it
sure.
In 2007. They won all their playoff games on the road. So to say it's some magical formula would be an exaggeration, but I still think it's an advantage.
Yeah. So Patriots have won the AFC East for the fourth time in a row.
It's just endless now. It's 10 out of 11, something like
Tom
that.
Tom Brady has 10 AFC crowns, AFC East crowns.
Yeah, Shalice Mansell-Young wrote about this in our Sunday paper. The other teams have just not been competition. It's as simple as that. They've had coaching turnover. They've had quarterback turnovers.
The Jets are in disarray again.
Yeah, they just can't compare to the sustained excellence that the Patriots have established.
So what are you watching for in the final 4 weeks, especially if you're if you're somebody who's just kind of coming to it now as the excitement's ramping up and thinking about, them heading toward the playoffs? What are you looking for in these games? Are there sort of holes that the Patriots have that you're hoping to see them play better in, or what are you watching for when you're
watching? Here's what we know. The Patriots have one of the best offenses in football. That's not going to change because they have one of the best quarterbacks. They have other tremendous skill players. The defense is where you got to watch, especially the defensive backfield. This is the secondary because that's where they've been vulnerable early season. But looks like Belichick's made some changes. He's got a rookie that he drafted at one cornerback, and they traded for Aqib Talib, kind of a controversial player who's starting at the other cornerback.
What's controversial about
him? Well, he has a criminal record, and he was suspended for 4 games for taking performance-enhancing drugs. So that's what makes him controversial, but he's definitely talented. We've seen great improvement in the last few weeks in that area, which was a noted weakness. I would continue to look at that to see if that continues to improve. This really is a team that could win a championship.
As they say, defense wins championships. Is that still
they
hold
do
true?
Say that? But offense has become more important in the modern day NFL, and that is no problem with the Patriots. They're going to score a lot of points. They were on pace to become the highest scoring team in the history of the NFL. That was slowed a little bit yesterday, and I probably with the weather getting colder.
Yeah.
I doubt they'll do that. But they could. And they're formidable.
All right, so that's the Patriots right there. A bit of a black cloud over the NFL this weekend, in particular in Kansas City, where there was this tragic event on Saturday.
That's correct, yes.
With Javon Belcher, who's a 25-year-old player, and he has some local ties. I mean, he played his college football in Maine.
That's right. He's from West Babylon on Long Island, and he played college ball at the University of Maine.
So this was a murder-suicide situation?
Yeah, and he is an anonymous player. I mean, at Maine, he was not well-known as a star, but he's made the NFL. He's sort of a self-made player, but still not well-known even among the NFL fans that aren't aware really who he is. We don't know a lot about what happened yet.
Yeah.
I mean, the report's still to come out, but today the reports are telling us that he shot his girlfriend 9 times. They had a 3-month-old child. And then he went to Arrowhead Stadium, where the Chiefs play their games. And in front of his coach and his general managers and others, he committed suicide.
Reportedly maybe thanking them for what they had done for him.
That was reported that he wanted to thank them. They had all done that, what they had done for him. And then he shot himself dead. It's a horrible, horrible story.
It's awful. And it's a violent one. And one that we're increasingly hearing about. I mean, for me anyway, you certainly immediately, Junior Seau comes to mind with, I mean, he obviously didn't murder anybody, but another gunshot suicide.
Thank goodness for that.
And, you know, and this is pure speculation, but one of the things that continues to come up now, every time an NFL player in particular does anything violent, out of character, murders, suicides, you hear this question about brain injuries.
Well, there have been several suicides of in recent years, and some of them have even Dave Dorison comes to mind, was a player.
That's
who his family donated his brain tissue to the BU study for on concussions and head injuries. I think there is the BU study, which the Globe had a big story on the front page today about it, that there is, I don't think anyone can deny, a correlation between blows to the head and this post-concussion syndrome, where can lead to a form of dementia, depression, and in some cases to these violent ends. I mean, there is a connection. For us to think that Javon Belcher, the Kansas City Chief player, had this condition is a real leap.
That's right.
By us. But there's no question that this is a problem in football, and we've had other examples of it. Yes.
So how do you think? How do you deal with this if you're the NFL? I mean, I think this is something that's been a huge problem with them understanding how to get their hands around. I mean, we've seen them make a lot of changes in recent years in how people are playing on the field. Certainly a lot more penalties for helmet-to-helmet contact.
Yes.
We're seeing, you know, what used to be these spectacular collisions on kickoffs and when, you know, wide receivers are coming across the middle. Those are being penalized. You're seeing less of them. Quarterbacks are being protected more. Is that enough?
Well, it's certainly something they should be doing. I think that's all good. The penalties for hitting defenseless players, changing where moving back where the kickoffs come from, so there's fewer returns, and because concussions seem to happen statistically are more prevalent in those type of plays. So I think the NFL is trying. Greg Bedard in the Sunday Globe in his Sunday Football Notes had a great. I don't even call it an item. It was his lead item. It's quite a long item. But it details how the Philadelphia Eagles deal with concussions. And I think most of the NFL, that's how it applies. And you see the lengths that the NFL is going to try to address this problem. But we're just really at the beginnings of acknowledging what a big problem it is. So
yeah.
I think there's a lot more to be done. I think the league is willing and the Players Association is willing to try to help do the best they can with this problem. It's a big problem, though, when they need to do something about it.
Is this complicated at all by a huge lawsuit against the NFL? I mean, I wonder, you know, I guess this is thousands of former players and thousands of former players' families who've filed against the NFL, saying in part that maybe the NFL has known that this is a problem, has known that this is a large problem, and have kind of swept that under the carpet a little bit over a period of years. Does that hinder, does that lawsuit in any way hinder the advance of more understanding about CTE, more research into it, or the NFL, you know, taking action?
Well, of course, the NFL has invested money in the research of CTE, a lot of money. And so they've certainly done that as a sort of, I don't want to call it, it's more than a goodwill gesture. It's putting their money where their mouth is. But I think you're right. I think any kind of result from a lawsuit would hinder how communication is done by the league and what they want to try and make themselves not liable for. So it's they're in a difficult spot, and they have to change culture. I mean, for years, coaches, players, the tendency was to continue to play despite the head injuries, and you know the players and coaches are both. I would share the blame in that. The player wants to play, and the coaches really want to put him back in the game.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a culture that filters down. That's not just the NFL, which is, you know, these big, huge, strong, in most cases, fully adult men who, you know, who are of an age where they can make their own decisions. But that culture filters down into college, filters down into high school, filters down into peewee.
Yeah, it certainly does. I can remember earlier in my career covering a high school game in New Jersey. This would be in the 1970s. And it was a school district with two high schools. And
Big rivalry, I assume.
Well, I'm standing with the coach of one of the school. They're playing not that school from the same district, but another school. And he looks up and he goes, "Oh, darn, the wrong doctor's here. This is the guy he's going to get one of two doctors, and the other high school is going to get the other. And this one was the guy that kept people out of games. And he was upset. But that's the 1970s. That's the way the culture was then. I think we're moving away from that. But I think that's an example of what we do have to move away from.
I'm talking with Joe Sullivan. He is the Boston Globe sports editor. We're talking about all things sport. A little bit of a roundup here, and I should say we can't take calls during this segment. But I would be curious about your take on the head injury thing. If you have kids who play football, if you play football, if you played football, head over to our Facebook page or send us an email. You can email us at bostonpublicradio@wgbh.org or just search us on Facebook. Would love to hear your take on the head injury situation, whether that's something that's that you've seen a culture changing, if that's something you're worried about, if that's something you experience. So we said we've been talking football, and I want to talk a little bit about Super Bowl Saturday, which is – well, why don't you tell us what Super Bowl Saturday is?
Well, it's when they have the championships. There's three sections of Massachusetts, and schools play for championships in the three sections. And many of the games – six of the games are at Gillette Stadium where the Patriots play. And you know, I guess they get a total of about, I don't know, I was in the 20,000 people throughout the whole day coming and going. And it's really a spectacular day for high school football in Massachusetts. The games are important. The players giving all they have, the fans, the parents, everyone involved. It's really an exciting day, championship day, and it happens all across the state.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, and a lot of it televised. I caught some.
Yeah,
of,
the games at Gillette Stadium are televised by Comcast Sportsnet and Channel 38, all six games, and they're on radio too. So it really is a spectacular day. Now, they're changing the playoff format in high schools.
How come?
Well, what they want to do is, in this case, you have champions from Western Mass, Central Mass, Eastern Mass. What they want to accomplish is get Massachusetts champions. In four now, I'll tell me. I think it's four divisions they're going to do. So next year at Gillette, we will have four championship games. I think it's four. My number could be wrong there. Where it is going to be for the championship of Massachusetts. So you could have Everett playing a school from Springfield, and the winner is the champion of all of Massachusetts.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so it's even more at stake, and it's going to be even better that they're doing it this way.
How exciting is it for the family and the players to be like at Gillette? Do they go over?
Oh,
the moon
I think
about
yeah,
this?
I think it's an unforgettable moment that is really a scrapbook moment for everyone, and it's very exciting.
How big is high school football here? Like compared to, I mean, you talk about covering in New Jersey.
Yeah.
My sense is you've got colleagues all over the country.
High
school football is huge, as we know, in places like Texas, Ohio, Pennsylvania. What's it like here?
In Florida. Don't forget Florida.
And in Florida.
Louisiana. It is, compared to other places, it's quite small.
Yeah.
And the interest level is small. That doesn't mean it's not, you know, there is keen interest by the people involved here in Massachusetts, and it's still the most important sport, high school sport in Massachusetts. And you know, that when you get back to the head injury argument, that's what we're talking about here. This is the sport the people, you know, sports fans in the United States are most interested in.
Yep.
And there's a real danger here of the sport. Some people could extrapolate that the sport is in danger of existing in its present form because of this head injury situation. And so Massachusetts, if you compare it to Texas or Florida or even New Jersey, little New Jersey, the games are of a higher caliber there. There are better players there.
Yeah.
But there's still tremendous competition here and high interest in Massachusetts.
All right. Well, there you go. So we've talked professional football. We've talked high school football. So we've got one missing. Let's talk a little bit about college football because this is something that's in the news a little bit right now. BC, which is probably the highest profile college program, both for football and basketball in this town, I would think.
Unquestionably.
They've got a coaching opening right now. We got a new athletic director at Boston College, Brad Bates, and he's looking for a coach. We had a 2-10 season by the Eagles this year. And in the Globe, in your paper recently, we've had a little bit of a battle of wills between Dan Shaughnessy and Bob Ryan. And I've loved watching this play out because what essentially is being argued back and forth between two of these columnists, both great writers, is whether or not college sports matter in this town.
Yeah.
What's your take on
that? Well, I do, having been elsewhere, but been in Boston now for nearly 20 years, I will say college sports are a niche sport in Boston.
Yeah.
So in that sense, Dan Shaughnessy is right. However, the way he wrote it is hyperbole for effect. To make his point, I think
for the first time ever in his career,
I think he took it a little far. I think writing that no one cares who coaches BC. I don't think that's right. But I think far more people care about Patriots Texans coming up next Monday than they do about who's going to be BC's coach. But
sure,
there are, you know, there's thousands and, you know, tens of thousands of BC graduates alone who this is very important to, and the Globe will be covering it closely.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me though because I feel like, you know, Boston College isn't competing year in and year out for these, you know, serious kind of BCS bowl kind of things. But when you look back over kind of the record, the people who've come through that program, both coaches, Tom Coughlin, who's won Super Bowls,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yep.
Even players. Chris Gasper, I think, wrote, here's something he wrote. He said, you probably can't win a national championship at BC unless the next Doug Flutie or Matt Ryan walks through the door, basically. But, you know, those are two players over the course of, what, 20, 25 years? That's not a bad record. If you have a player like that every 10 years.
Well, just last season, they had a linebacker, Luke Kuechly, who was the best linebacker in the country in the first-round NFL draft choice. They've had a lot of high-caliber players, and they were not far from a BCS bowl bid before in the last years of Jet Jagosinski, they can do it. I think it would be difficult, and they have a long hole, deep hole to dig out of right now. But I think it is possible to go to one of the larger bowl games. Winning a national championship, I think I would agree with Chris Gasper. That might be a little far-fetched.
Why?
Well, I just don't think they have the facilities and the also this gets back to high school football. You don't have the athletes,
system,
the football players in Massachusetts that you would say in Alabama. I mean, and Texas. The University of Texas just has to recruit Texas, and they're going to contend for a national championships. Florida has enough players for more schools than Florida, and BC could do well by recruiting Florida themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't get that depth of players out of Massachusetts that would put them at the same level, say, in Alabama.
So is this why you see something like a BU program or a BC program doing well in hockey? Is it that more hockey is being played at the youth level here, and we're able to sort of draw them up? Or
I knew when we were talking about high school sports today, we were going to talk about football, and although there is the most interest in high school football, it's not the best sport. The best sport clearly in Massachusetts for high schools is hockey.
Yeah.
That's where we produce our best athletes.
Why? Is that just
pro level?
Proximity to Canada, cold weather? What is it?
Well, I just think
it's just a culture?
Yeah, I think it is culture. I think, you know, in my years at the Globe, each team has won a championship, but there seemed to be the most joy associated with the Bruins one. I mean, that's probably, you know, it's because of the most recent, and maybe that's why
but
I'm carrying that joke.
But I think you're onto something here, though. There's a particular kind of fan base to hockey.
Yes,
right?
I mean, the Red Sox won, and there was the more overall joy. The
Everybody
Red Sox are more popular.
Sox, yep.
But it seems like the people who love the Bruins, there was just this incredible joy of them winning the Stanley Cup. And I just think, you know, there's a rink in every town, and there's a hockey culture in Boston, as opposed to a football culture that you would find in Alabama.
Yeah. Well, what's going on with the hockey season? Is it lost for good here?
It looks pretty grim,
yeah,
and no one willing to give in. So if no one's going to compromise, you're not going to get a deal. However, there is a meeting tomorrow. players and owners without the lead negotiators in New York. The NHL Board of Governors, as they call it, which is really the owners, meet Wednesday in New York. Let's hope something comes out of that so we can
Jeremy
get the Bruins
Jacobs,
back on ice.
Bruins owner, is one of this small group that's going to be meeting. And he's been described as one of the hardline owners.
Well, yeah, he has. We don't, you know, no one's on the record about that. So, but that reports have told us that, yes.
Yeah. Is this, you know, hockey lost an entire season in 2004. They were able, and it seemed like the labor dispute then was one thing. The league was losing a lot of money. They've righted the ship. They made $3.3 billion in revenue last year. This fight is a little bit different this time. It's just sort of over how to split up.
It is how to split up those billions. And I think the owners almost want to get the players to agree to curtail their own free spending ways. They would put limits on contracts. So it is all about the money. That's all it's about.
Are people missing the sport? And locally here, are they feeling the pinch in the North End? Are you guys feeling it at the Globe? Sports writers feeling it?
Well, I think there's a gap in our sports coverage. I see it as we plan the Daily Globe newspaper where the Bruins would be something we'd be emphasizing. It's not there. What replaces it probably just isn't as interesting. And of course, the businesses do suffer in the North End, North Station area. Let's bring it back. That's what I say.
All right,
I miss it.
There you go. Joe Sullivan from the Boston, sports editor of the Boston Globe. Really quick before I let you go, we got to talk a little bit about baseball. New first baseman signed by the Red Sox.
Yeah, Mike Napoli will be the first baseman and a powerful right-hand hitter who they think will send a few moonshots over the Green Monster this summer. Yeah. That's what they're rooting for.
You like the signing? Are we going to like him here?
Yeah, I think he's good. He fits the ballpark, so that makes sense.
All right, Clemens going to get voted into the Hall of Fame? Do you have a vote?
I don't, and he won't.
Okay. There it is. Joe Sullivan, the sports editor at the Boston Globe. Thanks for joining us here on Boston Public Radio.
Thanks for having me.
And there's Emily Rooney back with me here in Studio 3. How are you, Emily?
Hey, Edgar. How are you? Well, this is like the All Globe show.
Yeah, it really is.
We're about to be talking to Brian McGrory. He's got a new book about his pet. Do you know what it is?
What kind of pet it is? I don't know. Let's say something, maybe a potbelly pig.
No, close. A rooster.
Okay.
How it put him through a ringer and became an unlikely friend in the process. And he says it made him a family man. I just read the book. I loved it.
All right. How a rooster can make you a family man. Coming up. I'm Edgar Behar with the Third.
I'm Emily Rooney, and this is Boston Public Radio.